that silence that we just entered is not the kind of silence that we wish to develop. We wish to find a different degree of silence, a new depth, an expansion of our ability to rest in the infinite word. We must do this by beginning our study of the thunder of silence with a realization that is quite unique, different than any book we have ever begun, different than anything we have ever said or thought at the beginning of a series. We're going to start with the knowledge that what we are doing on this earth now should be the first resurrection. That is our purpose here. We are here to reveal that which is invisible to the sense of man. We are here to find a way in which we may unite our will with the will of the Father, so that there is one will with substance, with essence, a will that can walk forward in the divine light, bringing into visibility that which surrounds us, unknown to the mind of man. And so for the year 1970, we have a challenge facing us, which we propose to accept. And that challenge is this. In this year, we hope to join with those of you who are ready, capable, willing, committed to take dominion over form. That is the challenge we set for this year. And remembering the two thieves on the cross, one on each side of the Christ, we know that to take dominion over form involves taking dominion over mind, so that we must conquer the individual mind of man and that world mind which is the individual mind of man. If we learn to conquer mind, we conquer form. And in the overcoming of both mind and form, we take dominion over the world that is not the Father's kingdom. This may seem to be an ambitious project, but it's really what we've all been trying to do. And now, in the first resurrection, we are building that body called the Christ body, the body which knows no second death, the body which at the time of the second death continues to live, continues to express all that is of God. No longer is this something we think of as in the far future. No longer are we going to have a God in the sky, but rather we are going to find the God who is on the earth, the God who is present, the God who is alive, the God who is doing all things now and here, and learn to live in that God, bearing witness to what that God is doing where we stand. And for this we need the silence. For the silence is the womb where truth is born. The silence is the place where we learn to subjugate our human sense of will, our human sense of desire, our human sense of direction, and say, Father, speak. Tell me what you had in mind before the foundations of the world. Not what I will, not what I seek, not what I want, but show me reality. And in this silence, it is our function to express that which is called the finished kingdom. There is a place in your consciousness where your will walks away from God. And as you do that, you enter a state of separation. In that separation, unconsciously seeking the very thing you have left behind you, and then spending all your time reaching out to find it. This we all know. What we may not realize is this. At this very instant, we are dying. Each of us. We die every minute. I don't mean die daily in the sense that we should die to the flesh. I mean that we literally are dying daily, even though we don't want to. Every instant becomes a yesterday. And we give each instant into the past. Finally, there's no more. All of those instants that we have given away into the past mount up and become the final death. We are going to learn how to stop dying. Literally, how not to die, how to live, and how to live beyond the grave. We're going to learn about a place where there is no infirmity, no sin, no lack, no bad health, no sorrow, no hate. We're going to find that place if we are dedicated to one word, truth. And in that dedication, we have one great ally. And that is our true self. The Spirit of God, which is our substance, is the only ally we have. And we find that the distinction between living and dying, the distinction between truth and the lie, between light and darkness, between law and grace, between reality and unreality, are all part of the fiber of this book, Thunder of Silence. It begins with what is called the Two Covenants. There was a woman named Sarah, and it was late in her life, and she could not bear children. And she said to her husband, Abram, I have a handmaid, a bondmaid, Hagar. Why don't you have a child with her? Then we'll have a child. A strange request, but he said, fine, let's do it. And so Hagar bore him a child. And before the child came, when she conceived, Hagar became rather uppity with her own mistress. And so she said to Sarah, I could bear your husband a child, but you couldn't. And Sarah was offended. And she turned to her husband and said, we've got to get rid of this woman. She's getting fresh. She's beginning to take over the house as if she owned it. I want you to send her away. And he said to her, well, the matter is in your hands completely. And so she reprimanded the maid. One word led to another, and the maid did run away. All before she conceived. And on the way, an angel met her and told her she would bear a son. But the angel said, the Lord sees what is happening to you, And although your son will not inherit the kingdom, will not inherit the fortune of the master, he will nonetheless receive much in this world. And from his lineage will come other princes. He will be important in the natural world. And so return home. And she did. And she bore Ishmael. And then Ishmael became a wild one, a reckless one, a willful one, a disobedient one, a rouster. Meanwhile, Sarah, who was barren, now conceived and had her own son. And the Bible says she was 90 years old. It says that Abraham, her husband, was 100. And this second son was also fathered by Abraham, but his name was Isaac. Now, in itself, the story would seem to have no meaning. A man of 90 becoming the father, almost 90, of a bondmaid's son, and then at 100 becoming the father of his wife's son, the wife being 90 years old at the time. And perhaps we might even have passed that story and said, so what? It's that Old Testament with the God of wrath and vengeance, the God who isn't even God. But along comes Paul and says, these events represent the two covenants of man. The birth of Ishmael to the bondwoman, fathered by Abraham, and the birth of Isaac to the free woman, his wife, fathered by Abraham again. And Joel thinks so much of Paul's statement that he makes it the beginning of his book. So we have to look at it. We have to find what that means to us. And we see a very interesting thing. As we look back through the Old Testament, we find similar events taking place with Cain and Abel, with Ham and Seth, and later with Isaac's children, Esau and Jacob. Always the first is unruly, and what is called a natural child. But the second, as in the case of Jacob and Isaac, has a new quality, a spiritual quality. And although this was not clear at the time it was written, it has become clear that these two always represent one. The first birth and the second birth. And we were being told by the prophets that after the first birth, the natural birth of the flesh, we have a choice for a second birth. Ishmael, the willful one, can become Isaac, the spiritual one. Cain can become Abel. Esau can become Jacob. Ham can become Seth. And along the line we find finally a Jesus who is both. And doesn't become two, but is two in one. First the man, and then the Christ. And this is the teaching there. Ishmael represents this world. Each of us, born of the flesh, in our own will, in the will of our parents, destined to move in a world of matter, striving to find ourselves, to fulfill ourselves, believing the things we see, believing only what we can touch. And yet, the second birth is not of the bondwoman, the woman who is a slave. The second birth is of the freeborn. The second birth is the birth of Christ in us. The realization that I am not a material being laboriously developed in a womb. I'm something else. I'm born of the substance of God. I'm more than just a physical form walking the earth. I'm more than a mind. I am a substance that never dies. I am a substance that knows no evil. I am a substance that has power over every evil on the face of the earth. I am a substance that can never lack. I am the very substance of God. And this is the meaning of the birth of Isaac. Isaac, because he is freeborn, not born of the bondwoman, ultimately inherits the fortune of Abraham, which is the symbolism for the fact that being Christ aware, he inherits the kingdom of God, or in other words, he lives and moves in reality. Ishmael does not. And yet a very interesting thing happens. Ishmael is given quite a bit of land, quite a bit of possessions, and is given another opportunity to become Christed. And the indication is that everyone on the earth has the opportunity. Nobody is excluded from the opportunity to come into a new state of being as a new creature in Christ. An individual who knows himself to be not that which is born of flesh which must die, but that which is born of spirit which can do nothing but live. And this was the Old Testament way of revealing to us what are called the covenants of the natural man with God and the spiritual man with God. And when you come into the second covenant, the spiritual man with God, you can erase the word covenant. Because between God and the spiritual man, there is no covenant. They are one. The covenant is when you're in the process of discovering that one. Now, as you look around the world, unless you are very careful, you make the mistake of identifying the forms as material forms. They are to Ishmael, but they are not to Isaac. They are to the man born of the flesh, but they are not to the man born of the spirit. They are not material forms. They only appear to be. They are really world thought. And as we learn to look at these forms, identifying them as world thought, we see why it is said that Jesus did not come to earth to condemn. Whom shall he condemn if all that is here is world thought made visible? Now, if you will pause 1 second, there is something you should know that you may never have heard before. I hope it isn't only a sentence to you. I hope it can lead to the realization of it and the inner confirmation of it within your own soul. It is impossible to live in this world. You cannot do it. There is no life in this world. The world is the appearance of world thought. Life is not in it. Life will never be in it. And no matter how you strive to live in this world, you are wasting time. All you can do is appear in this world. Life is not in the visible world. The visible world is the appearance. And if you are fooled by the appearances, then you think you're living, but you're not. You're dying. You can only live in the invisible kingdom of spirit. And as this realization comes to you, you know why you're told to sow to the spirit, not to the flesh. You cannot live in the flesh because it is a thought appearance. It is not reality. You can only live in the spirit, which is reality. And as you live in the spirit, then that which you experience in the spirit is harvested in the spirit. You never seek your harvest in the flesh. You never seek your harvest in the appearances. You learn that these are only added things. When you're told the fields are already white to harvest, it means in the spirit. And when we come to the realization that life is always in the spirit, we learn to live there. We live there in our consciousness. We are here to live in our consciousness, in the spirit, where the will of the Father in us expresses the fruits of the spirit as the invisible harvest. And as we experience this invisible harvest, then in the world of appearances, the world will see a happy, healthy, wholesome us. But that isn't our life. That is the projection of world thought about what we are doing in our life. And the reason you must learn this is this. If you live in the appearances, you're in the false life, and when the appearances are over for you, the life is over. But in the first resurrection, you're living not in the appearances, but in the life, as the life. And then when the appearances are over, the life continues to live itself, and you are that life. And so we're here now to become conscious of that life, which is not a form, which is not an appearance, which is not dying, but which is life eternal itself. And to do this, we cannot put our faith in the material possessions of this world. We can accept them as the outer fruits of the inner harvest, but always the harvest must be in the invisible. The moment you start living your life not in the world, but in the invisible, in the reality, in your understanding of the presence of God where you stand, you will discover that a new substance is forming in you. Christ forming in you is the new substance. Now, there are various techniques that are used to live this life of reality as contrasted to the make-believe life of material form in appearances. And when you have not mastered the art of the new kind of silence that we are coming to, Then you find that even though your heart is willing and you give the time and the devotion to the task, you still can fail. You can still put in the hours without the harvest. To stop dying, you must see that all dying is done in time. You will never hear a more important lesson than the lesson about living in eternity and dying in time. Because that is the absolute clue to the illusion of life and the reality of life. When you find possessions in time, that is exactly where you will lose them, in time. Now, Ishmael was born into time. When you're born in the flesh, you're born into time. And that's where you die, in time. When you're born in the spirit, you're born in eternity. And you cannot die in eternity. It is impossible to die except in time. And when you have mastered not living in time, you cannot die. You really can stop dying. Living in time is the natural endowment of every child born in the mother's womb. It is born in time, it grows up in time, it has its experience in time, and all of these are world thought forms. Having no relationship to God, no divine law to sustain them, they are the outer appearances, and they die. When Jesus stepped out of time into spirit, it was impossible for death to ever come to his door. And also, it was impossible for those lacks and limitations that occur only in time to touch him. When you take advantage of your options, which say you have a choice, you can elect to be reborn out of time, then you're catching the idea that we who are born in time are here for a purpose, and it is to be reborn in eternity. We have never been given that opportunity as clearly as it is given to us when we see the full picture of reality. Born into time, we can elect grace. We can literally decide to accept divinity and be reborn out of time. And while we are living out of time, we also have the privilege of watching the fruits of what we're doing out of time move into appearances in time to show us what we are doing out of time. The world becomes our vast television set on which we can see exactly what we're doing in the invisible while it appears in the visible as a perfect chart or gauge or index. And that's the reason there's a world in time. Not for you to live in it, but for you to use it as a chart to show you the progress you're making in the spiritual universe. Now, the silence you have known has been a silence in time. And in many cases, you have found it unfruitful because a silence in time is little better than a will in time or a concept in time. You have to find your silence out of time. And I'm quite sure you've never thought of it that way. The silence must be invested in the invisible spirit outside of the passing time. If you were to go duck hunting and shoot 10 ducks and then go out to collect them and found out that they were just shadows. And then if you were to do this over and over again, you'd finally say, what's the point? If you were to knit a sweater and found that there was no wool in the needles, you would stop knitting. And as we wouldn't hunt ducks if they were shadows, or knit without wool in our needles, we must learn not to meditate, not to enter the silence, unless we're entering the silence where the silence has substance. Or else we merely sit there. Now your silence must be not the silence in which there is no sound. That's a superficial silence. Or maybe it's the beginner's silence. You must have the word infinity involved in your silence. It must be an infinite silence in the eternal now. And to give you a further feeling for that, let us see that God, Spirit, is the only existence. Wherever you are, God is. God is always where you are in full force, as the infinite invisible spirit. And that infinite invisible spirit, being where you are, if you're not willing to take one more step, it's not going to do you any good. And this step is hardly the step for a beginner. It's not the step for someone who just picked up a book and is looking at the first chapter and has had no background. This is the step for you, though. In order to live, really live, you've got to die. You've got to die right there in that meditation. As long as there's a me sitting down there meditating, you're wasting time. God can never come into the consciousness of me. As long as you've got two there, you're wasting time. And you're in time. Me is always in time, and God is always in eternity, and they cannot meet. And the minute you step out of time, there's no me anymore. Me must die. When you realize that me must die, then your meditation is the realization that God is here now. Not to help me, not to bring me something, not to lead me somewhere. God is here now and only God. And when you have reached the place where that is your meditation, you are laying down your false concept about a you that was born into time, grew up in time, lived in time, and would die in time unless you stepped out of that false me before it died. All of this is the meaning of the two covenants, of the two births, Ishmael and Isaac. To step out of me steps out of time. Now, God being all, God being here, God being where you are, and God being the only one there, you can relax in the knowledge that God is being a perfect God. That God is doing everything that should be done. Nothing can be improved or changed or rearranged. There's nothing you need to think about. Nothing you need plan about, because God's universe is already completed. And as long as there's a you thinking, planning, hoping, waiting, trying to find something, there's a separation from reality. God is the reality. And God is all. And if there is a you, too, then you're separated from God. Because God is not you. God is spirit. And the you that is flesh is not that God. But the you that is spirit is that God. And that spirit, that you, which is called I, that spirit, that life, that infinity, does not dwell in passing time. As long as your consciousness is still in passing time, you are sowing to the flesh. And you will reap the ultimate destruction of that flesh. And when you have renounced the first birth in the flesh and have accepted the spiritual reality of your being, then no longer can you say, my shoulder hurts. No longer can you say, I'm aging, or I have fear. Because spirit doesn't have a hurt shoulder, isn't aging, and doesn't have fear. You must learn then that spirit does not even have a face, or a heart, or a pair of lungs. Spirit does not have skin or eyes or ears. The death of me is total. And it is not the kind of death in which you take a gun and remove the body, because that death wouldn't be enough. That death would satisfy nothing. That's the lower thief. The higher thief is the mind. It must be the death of that consciousness which is separated from God. That consciousness must die. And when that consciousness dies, then there is a newborn consciousness of spirit. And that spiritual consciousness will feed what you have called your form. It'll still be there. Your dying daily is to the consciousness, not to the form alone. To deny your consciousness as a one born of the flesh is to invite oneness with God. I, flesh, can never be one with the Father Spirit. And if I persist in that paradox of trying to be, I'll always fail. Now, if you have not had the luxury of that oneness with God, which is born of the absence of a me, then you have not entered into the first resurrection. You have not entered into the kingdom of God on earth, And your judgment will be that judgment which says, inasmuch as you and the Father are not one, inasmuch as you have not accepted spiritual identity as your only self, then you cannot inherit the kingdom of God. And we will have to give you another opportunity in your return into the flesh. But if you have caught the meaning of now are we the sons of God, then you will find that your consciousness is not living in this passing time, but is living in the eternal now, and this becomes the source of the word of truth that opens up and feeds your complete experience in the outer appearing world. Your change of consciousness from the belief that you exist as a mortal to the knowledge that you can only live in the invisible spiritual universe is the only way you can come into that life which is eternal and stop dying. Now let's see what the infinite silence really means. We have this split second in which God is being God. You must be conscious that everywhere on this earth at this moment, everywhere off this earth at this moment, God is being God, and only God is being. Now, in this second alone, all of God is functioning everywhere. And when you're silent with that, you're in an infinite silence, knowing that God is functioning throughout infinity at this moment. And nothing else is functioning. Only God. This which you come to realize in this split second will someday be your permanent consciousness. You will move through all appearances with the knowledge that now God is functioning infinitely everywhere, and nothing else is functioning. It will be your realization that only God is here. Only God is there. Only God is everywhere. And this is a fundamental, unchanging truth. Only God is everywhere. And the instant you deny this, by thought, deed, or act, you have stepped into time. You have stepped into separation. You have stepped out of now. But if you can hold this consciousness by the silence, by the repetition of the silence, by the revelations that come in the silence, by the integrity of your dedication, by the hours and hours and hours of practice to the truth of it, you will find that the knowledge that only God is present everywhere becomes your living consciousness and is your eternal now. That consciousness is immune to death. That consciousness is immune to the ills of this world. That consciousness is the first resurrection attained. Only God is functioning everywhere. I and that God are one. Now, as the world comes at you with its temptations, it is going to challenge that. And almost instantly, the moment you have resolved to stand still in the realization that now, everywhere, only God is, you will find the challenges will come to you from every direction, small ones and big ones. But if it's the truth, are the challenges real? Need they be defended against? If God is only the only presence on this earth now, against whom are you facing challenges? Against illusions. If God is the only presence on this earth, where is sickness? Where is limitation? Where is evil? Where is crime? Where is arson? Where is rape? Where is war? They are all the temptations to make you believe that God is not the only presence on this earth now. But who is it in you that believes these things? The me. The me that must die. Because as long as that me is there, you will take the challenge and you will try to react to it. Only the me of you, the Ishmael, is looking out and saying there's a war there, and there's racism there, and there's hatred there, and there's poverty and starvation there. But they're not there. They're only there in relation to the me, which is living in time. And God is not living in time. Reality is not living in time. As long as this me remains alive, it is living its sense of false existence, and it is denying the allness of God. There cannot be a me, for the me is the very denial itself of the allness of God. As long as there is God and me, then God is not all. This is the most difficult part of all the work, whether you're in the first chapter of a book or the 15th, whether you're in the 19th reincarnation or the 302nd. Me wants to be here, and yet me wants the fruits of the Spirit, and this is the eternal paradox of the flesh and the Spirit. Now, the purpose of thunder, of silence, the purpose of the complete infinite way, is to bring us to that place where we step out of me into I. Out of a false sense of self, living in time, changing time, passing time, into the realization that there never could be such a self if God is all. There cannot be such a self, nor can there be passing time. The overcoming of the illusion of self and time lifts us into the realization that I am that Spirit, that Christ, which is timeless, spaceless. And I'm lifted up to where I can see events not happening in time, but happening simultaneously everywhere. You see the circle of eternity instead of the linear time. You see the simultaneity of life, the oneness of life now in a now that never becomes less than now. This is the year in which these things we shall attempt to attain in our realization. Let's end the first part of this talk with the word now in your consciousness, and see that now for you is different than it is for the world. To the world, now means this day, this date, this hour, this minute, this second, and to you now will begin to mean all that God is now, all that God is doing everywhere now, all that God will ever be. 5 million years from now, God is now. You are looking at a now which is really the infinite universe, because it will never be any different than it is this moment. That's the now which our consciousness must live in. All of God's infinite being is being that now. And because I am the very substance of God, all that God's infinite being is being now, I must be. And so there's no need, unfulfilled, there's nothing I lack. My harvest is total, completed. All I need do is stand in that consciousness, and behold, God functioning in his sequence as all that God is and all that God knows is necessary, moves into the visible universe of man. Now I'm living, and I behold the fruits of my life in the world of time-space. I'm not living in time-space. There I behold the fruits of the life that I am living in God. And the life that I am living in God is the life eternal. And that's the meaning of the word now. When you step out of it, you have died. When you are in it, you are in the Christ life. In the second half, we'll take some very practical examples to show how subtly we move out of the eternal now into time and lose our birthright. And knowing how easily it can be done, we will be more vigilant, watching, and perhaps learn how to stay in that now, even as we go about our daily affairs. That will be what we will do in the second half of the first chapter, the two covenants.